This is Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily. My guest at this time is RJ Smith of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. Over the past few days, undoubtedly, if you've looked at the news, you've seen raging wildfires throughout California, especially in the southern part of the state, that have even threatened some of the Los Angeles suburbs. Hundreds of thousands of acres have been charred, and dozens of structures, especially homes, have been consumed by the blaze as well. But is this something that's preventable? Or is it just something that is a result of the dry conditions and perhaps carelessness on the part of some people, or just lightning strikes is inevitable in that part of the country? RJ says, no, a more sensible forest policy from the federal government would, in fact, make these fires much less of a problem. And RJ, thanks so much for being with us.
Nice to be with you. I appreciate it.
What is at the heart of this? Why is a government regulation and government oversight of the forest a contributing factor to some of these huge fires we see year after year?
Well, we always have fires for all kinds of natural causes and for mistakes that humans make. But what has happened over the last century has been a combination of policies that have been developed, particularly by the U.S. Forest Service, as they began to take over most of the great forests across the West. They didn't like fire to begin with. And so fire had been a natural part of the background and the ecosystem, and fires had gone through these forests on a fairly regular basis. And by doing so, they kept the underbrush and the duff and the deadwood and undergrowth trees from coming up. And so when the fires went through, they were sort of low ground-hugging, relatively cool fires that kept the forest healthy. And but because of our aversion to fire, we began to try to attempt to put out every single fire that came along by first thing next morning, instead of letting fires burn slowly in areas where they might do some good. And the result of this has been a long period of the buildup of huge, unnatural loads of fuels in the forest, with all kinds of deadwood, and particularly with lots of undergrowth forests, smaller trees growing up densely underneath the larger trees of the forest. So where you might have had in the past, like, say, 10 big trees per acre, you now might have hundreds of trees per acre. And these undergrowth trees have a tendency to ladder the fire up into the crowns of the trees, where they become killer fires because they burn off either the foliage or the needles. So that was one policy that was going on. And so we had fuels building up all over the West, all over the forest. So when fires did come, they were far more intense and did far more harm. And because these fires were often so hot, they would actually change the characteristics of the soils, bake it so it became hard and adobe-like, kill the changed nutrients in the soil, kill soil bacteria, and then cause massive erosion too. Then you realize that you've entered the period of environmentalism, and the environmentalists, for a number of reasons. One, they wanted less harvest in the forest, less cutting of trees to begin with, so there was very little thinning out. There were few people getting in there. They began to close roads in the forest, so it was harder to get in and fight forests. They also, one of the things they did was make it very difficult, and you had to go through longer and longer processes to get the permits, and the greens would go to court to try to prevent it if you did, to come in and use pesticides when there would be outbreaks of disease or insects or bark beetles, which have been ravishing and killing the forest all across the West. Now, on private forest land, if you get an infestation of some sort of bark beetle or tussock moth or whatever it might be, private landowners and to some degree state forest managers would immediately come in and cut out the diseased and dead trees, take them out and burn them somewhere and try and nip this in the bud. But now they're just allowed to, rampage through the forest, killing off the forest. And so the combination of having diseased and dying and dead trees in the forest are turning a lot of the forest from being very healthy forest into very unhealthy forest, ticking time bombs waiting for things to come.
So what policies would be most advisable to pursue as in order to stop this from happening and to have the forest grow in a healthier way?
Right. And then add on top of that more of the environmental legislation that came down with a growing impact starting from the 1970s of the Endangered Species Act. And particularly as this was applied across the West beginning in the early 90s, in which even private landowners, not just the national forests and so on, had to operate under a policy that they could not harm either the existing endangered species that were in those areas or harm or alter their habitat. And the first big disaster we had on that was in the California fires in 1993 in San Bernardino County. In the Winchester area, where landowners were told that they could not go out and do as they traditionally had to do every late summer. The California State Department of Forestry and Fire Protection would send them notices. The fire season is approaching, and they were required by law in California to clear fire breaks up to 100 feet away from any structures, from their homes, and clear them down to bare mineral soil. And this was done by using discers that would go around, and you would clear these fire breaks. Well, Fish and Wildlife, or U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, notified people and notified the county fire departments that this might harm, this might irritate, this might actually destroy some burrows or destroy some habitat of the Stevens kangaroo rat. And that they couldn't use this disking process. Well, that was effectively the only thing they could do to really clear fire breaks. And so in that resulting fire, because the landowners sat there not knowing what to do or fearing that they would go to jail or be fined if they cleared fire breaks, either 26 or 29, I forget the exact number, of homes in that area burned down in the resulting fire. And that sad thing has happened more and more. In a number of the fires we've had in Southern California, in San Diego County, in Orange County, and in San Bernardino County, during the 2000s and 2003, 5, 7, those fires were an area in the coastal sage scrub habitat, which is sort of like dense brush. The landowners there, even on brush that you had on your private land, were often effectively prohibited from clearing brush on their own land or from clearing fire breaks up on the side of the hills on public land because this was the habitat of the endangered California gnatcatcher, which is a little chickadee-like bird that supposedly doesn't like to fly very far and avoids even flying across fire breaks. And so this is when we started having some of the really huge fires that took human life, that burned down, you know, thousands of homes and so on. And then we saw the same thing in Northern California and in Oregon, in which you could not go in and clear areas at all inside the pine forest there, because that was the home of the threatened northern spotted owl. And we did the same thing in Arizona and New Mexico because of the Mexican spotted owl. You were prevented from going in and trying to stop fires before they occurred by clearing things out, any threats that might be fires. So what's the loser in this? I mean, everybody is, because not only are people killed and their homes and ranches and farmhouses burned down, but you actually destroy the habitat of the endangered species that the Greens said that they were trying to save and protect. I mean, when you have these massive fires, you know, 500,000 acres, 500,000 acres or more of forest burning at one time that's home to spotted owls, or once that forest is gone, it's not going to come back for you know, decades or maybe even a century or so. And so where do the spotted owls, where the endangered species go? Well, I mean, there's no place for them to go.
RJ, unfortunately, our time is up. Thank you, sir, very much for being with us today.
I enjoyed it.
Absolutely. RJ Smith of the Competitive Enterprise Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America reporting for WorldNet Daily.